I'm Ryan Robertson.
And I'm Max Stiles.
And this is Missions Talk, brought to you by Nine Marks and Reaching and Teaching International Ministries. Nine Marks exists to equip church leaders with a biblical vision and practical resources for building healthy churches. To learn more about Nine Marks, visit ninemarks.org. Reaching and Teaching serves local churches by helping them send qualified missionaries to make mature disciples, establish healthy churches, and train local leaders around the world. You can find out more about Reaching and Teaching at rtim.org. In today's episode, we will be talking about the life and ministry of Adoniram Judson. And joining us today is Jason Juicing. Jason serves as the Provost, Senior Vice President for Academic Administration, and Professor of Historical Theology at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. So welcome, Jason.
Thanks so much.
Three different titles, brother. That's, you got a lot on your plate.
I've been around a long time, so I think that's what it is. So
there you go. So one of those titles involves teaching historical theology. And I wanted to start off, this is our first episode in which we're talking about a historical figure. And I want to zoom in on, like, why is it important for Christians to study historical theology, Jason? And specifically, why should church leaders, missionaries, aspiring missionaries study the lives and ministries of historical missionaries?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think you could have a whole episode just on that, or at least I would listen to it. I don't know how many people would, but really the task of historical theology and church history more broadly is, as Timothy George has talked about, just retrieving things of the past, whether that's people and lives or doctrine, for the sake of renewal in the present. But we look back not just to learn more facts. One of the things I like to do, especially as believers doing this task, is we're also looking back to see Christ. Point to Christ, we can look at their lives, look through them to see and to be sharpened in our understanding, appreciation, and love of the Lord Jesus Christ. As far as it relates to missions, really there's two tasks as well. One is just there is deep encouragement that can come. Specifically about our figure today, Adoniram Judson, I've seen church history professors in the past, even 100 years ago, say there's no better life for calling men and women into service and also to sustain them in service. So, you know, there's a dual function of just the inspiration of his life and his obedience, and then also his perseverance through suffering can both help call but also sustain. And then really just as we think about the Great Commission, believers should want to study and to know church history well as they're going out to reach peoples who have yet no churches. So you're building upon this history and tradition of the past, knowing what believers throughout all time have stood for and died for in order that the gospel can finally get to these people who have never heard of Christ and establish for the first time a history of Christianity. So a lot of factors.
Yeah, that is so good, Jason. Very helpful. So now you edited a volume on Adoniram Judson for a series of biblical studies on Baptist life and thought. What stands out about Judson's life and ministry that makes him such an important figure in Baptist and missions history?
Well, he's important on a number of levels, particularly, again, we as Americans are often, to our detriment, very American-focused. So it's helpful to have an American life that we can point to that's taking us out of America and pointing us to very hard places at the ends of the earth. Mm-hmm. And then just the consistency of his life. And for what's been recorded, we can see the vulnerability of his life, both in the events that led to his conversion and his atheism and agnosticism that he repented of, but then also his pioneering nature of his service, his willingness to go when no one else was going. But then, as I've talked about here already a little bit, just the way in which he persevered through deep trial and suffering. All of this, of course, what's great about him is it's under this backdrop of just really solid and faithful allegiance to the scriptures and to consistent historic Christianity. You can really lean on him in many areas, and he's not going to fall down.
That's good. Now, reading his life, there's several different books we'll talk about later. But I know he was born into a Congregationalism home. His dad was a pastor in the Congregationalist denomination. This is a Nine Marks podcast, so I want to be clear. What theological distinctives do those in the Congregational denomination hold to? Like, was this kind of the Jonathan Lehmans of the day, or is this a completely different denomination?
Well, as regards their polity, I mean, it would be similar to what our brother Jonathan Lehman is articulating in terms of elder-led congregationalism. Really, you're talking about a denomination or a connection of churches that it's best to think of at this time, in the early 1800s, as the heirs of Jonathan Edwards. What you have here is really the fruit of the First Great Awakening that moved through 100 years before this, or 75 years or so before this, and through the influence of Edwards and Whitfield is really upending churches for the sake of the gospel. You have a lot of churches choosing to hold to their tradition and rejecting the revivals of the Great Awakening. They have many of them within the churches embracing. So the Congregationalist churches of which Judson is reared, his father's a pastor, is really that second and third generation heirs of Jonathan Edwards.
Yeah, brother, you sort of alluded to this, that Adoniram at some point was an atheist. But tell us about kind of, obviously he repented of that, as you said, but tell us about his desires for service overseas as a missionary.
Yeah, he was from a very young age, very gifted, brilliant, and really we would probably term a genius. Obviously they don't have IQ tests and things at that time. And because of that, he was a man of great ambition. And that led to him, and again, you're talking at a time of the influx and the growing influence of theistic philosophy, really men and women relying upon their own reason rather than on Christianity or scripture.
Harvard had gone Unitarian. I mean,
yes.
So
you have a very smart young man imbibing on those things and wanting to, you know, rebel from the church of his father. And this ambition ultimately was humbled through his own conversion. And at that point of humbling, he begins working through, well, you know, it's true repentance and a willingness to go and to do whatever God will want him to go and to do. This leads him to study at Andover Seminary, one of the earliest seminaries in America, a Congregationalist seminary in just northeast of Boston. What was left of that campus is still there today. It's now Phillips Executor Academy. And he was studying there partly in the early years to iron out his faith. He comes to Christ and then works through even surrendering. And you're wondering, well, how is he even aware of broader missions and the desire to go to the ends of the earth? And historians at that time document that you could not go through Andover Seminary without reading the works of Jonathan Edwards, particularly his theological works, but also his diary and journal of David Brainerd.
Yeah, right.
Brainerd, of course, early American cross-cultural missionary to Native Americans. And then also he is reading letters and transcripts of William Carey. Carey had left a famously formed Baptist Missionary Society just a few decades before. So he's reading these two things, but in 1809, 1810, he comes across a sermon by an Anglican minister in England called A Star in the East. And it's a sermon based on Matthew 2. So we think of that as the Nativity passage and things that we read at Advent and Christmas time. And to be fair, the exegesis of that sermon is not all that great. It's not what we would uphold in preaching classes and things, because what he's doing is essentially saying, see, there was a star in the east, therefore we should also be going to the east.
Yeah.
And but the principles in there are true, and God uses even broken sermons many times.
That's right.
Our own. And so these things all culminate in Judson's mind, where he's humbled, surrendered, he's aware of the need, and then he feels really just this clear call to respond to go eastward. So he begins reading everything he can find about the East, where the needs are.
I see.
And he comes across a book about the needs, particularly in Burma. He just says, that's where I'm going.
Now, but he went to India first, right? He knew Carey. Is that right?
He did.
Do I have
he
that
did.
Right?
So, you know, that no one was being sent out formally from America at this time.
Uh-huh.
There were others, you know, famously George Lyle earlier, African-American, was cross-cultural from America to Jamaica.
Right.
There was no formal missions society. So what Judson and his friends had to do was organize the churches to send. And basically they decided, we're going to go to India first to meet up with Carey and then hopefully deploy out from there.
I see.
To Burma. And that's the path he
And what made us specifically interested in Burma?
Just really that, you know, he's reading these accounts that there had really no one there yet. So there was this sense of, you know, Carey's in India. Carey's son Felix was going to be going to Burma. And by the time Judson gets there, he's able to, Felix had already gone and come back and was telling him how hard it was. But really, it was just the fact that the need was great and no one had done. And in Burma then, and as today, is one of the seven or eight wonders of the world, the Shwe Dagon Pagoda. It's this epicenter of Buddhism. And so it's sort of like, in our terms today, where's the area of greatest lostness? Where's the areas of greatest need? And Judson saying, that's where I'm going to go.
Yeah.
So Jason, you already mentioned Adoniram was a student at Andover College. And initially he was alone at that college in his passion to preach the gospel overseas. But some students come over from William College, eventually making their way to Andover. And they were zealous to come alongside of Judson Williams College was the location of this significant piece of American, I think, missions history or church history, and it's the Haystack Prayer Meeting. What was the Haystack Meeting?
Well, in 1806, a handful of students at Williams College, this is in Williamstown, Massachusetts, still a prominent, quite Ivy League school. They're part of the Little Ivies and nestled in the Berkshire Mountain Range. So you go far western Massachusetts, almost into your upstate New York, is this little hamlet of Williamstown and Williams College. And it was that way. Students were studying there. It's a Congregationalist college. And many of them, this is prior to them interacting with Judson, were reading the reports of William Carey. So one of the fascinating things about Carey's life is that he regularly, through the Baptist Missionary Society, would write letters back home, and then they would send them out to churches and things to read. So the accounts of what's happening in India, which about that time were really starting to pick up. So these students were just really inspired and invigorated by Carey and began meeting regularly together in a group they called the Brethren for prayer, basically to read Carey's letter and then to pray about their own involvement. And on one occasion, they were walking together out in the sort of northern part of campus, which in Williamstown, sort of up on a hilltop. They're sort of walking down in these farmland slopes on the backside. And part of the way I'm able to describe this so vividly is all this is still the same there. You can go to Williams College and see the fields out back behind. And a thunderstorm comes upon them, and their only place of shelter were in these giant haystacks. Haystacks in 1806 were not the meticulously formed, cylindrical things that machines make today and dump off the backside of a tractor. These were just basically piles of hay as high as a human being could pile them with a pitchfork. So it's more of that sort of Dutch Holland metaphorical, parabola shape. And they're just carving out basically a shelter from that. And they're meeting in there in this haystack. And at that point, they continue their meeting. And essentially, they'll look at one another and say, to change the trajectory of our lives, take the gospel overseas. So they consecrate themselves to that task and agree. And as someone who teaches in theological education at a seminary, I'm so glad that they didn't just launch themselves out from there. They felt the need for further training, and they went on to Andover Seminary to receive education. And it's there that they intersected with Adoniram Judson. So you have God and his providence really working among two groups of people that coincide together right at the time that Adoniram's willing and ready to need friends to come alongside him, organize churches to send them, because there wasn't a vehicle to send them at that time.
You know, Jason, one of the people that came alongside him was Ann Judson, and whose life, of course, deserves its own episode. I mean, we could really do her justice, so to speak. But is there anything that stands out from Ann's life, Ann Judson, that you'd want listeners to be aware of?
Ann is remarkable and a life worthy of study and mention. I'm so glad you asked about her. She's very much his equal intellectually, as also for zeal for missions and for the task. She had to surrender to go too. They met, and their courtship was relatively brief. It was during this time of Judson finishing his time at Andover Seminary and organizing churches, and he was going around to all the Congregationalist churches, especially down in Boston, where she attended. And one of the meetings where they're meeting with pastors, he would meet her. They would begin to visit, and he would begin to court her, and she began to be invigorated by this task. There's a wonderful letter that's preserved at the moment at which Adoniram wants to propose to her that he writes her father, essentially acknowledging that if you grant me your blessing to marry her, I'm going to take her to the ends of the earth, and likely you'll never see her. But he extols the worthiness of that task. This is a different day and time of missionary service, obviously, and She is, of course, willing to do that. And as they're traveling to overseas, she is very much studying the scriptures with him and through him as he's working through strategy and things like this. So much of what we know about Adoniram is because Anne wrote letters back, and they were just a remarkable woman. And not only for, as I've talked about, what led to her going with Adoniram and for her exemplary missionary service as well overseas.
So, Jason, I actually have the text of this letter because I think it's important for people listening right now to you can just hear Adoniram through this letter. Man, this guy was incredible. So he writes to Mr. Hasseltine this. I have now to ask whether you can consent to part with your daughter early next spring to see her no more in this world, whether you can consent to her departure to a heathen land and her subjection to the hardships and sufferings of a missionary life, whether you can consent to her exposure to the dangers of the ocean, to the fatal influence of the southern climate of India, to every kind of want and distress, to degradation, insult, persecution, and perhaps a violent death. Can you consent to all this for the sake of him who left his heavenly home and died for her and for you? For the sake of perishing immortal souls? For the sake of Zion and the glory of God? Can you consent to all this in hope of soon meeting your daughter in the world of glory, with a crown of righteousness brightened by the acclamations of praise, which shall resound to her Savior from heathen saved, through her means, from eternal woe and despair? I don't think I have heard a more eloquent letter ever written to a potential father-in-law. And her dad said yes, which just speaks to him.
And Adoniram, Jason, he was like, what, 24 years old?
Yeah, he would have been in his early 20s, yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
All these young college students now thinking through how they can write poetic prose to potential father-in-laws. Adoniram was unique. So eventually, again, Anne and Adoniram get married. They head off to India, as we've already talked about. And on the boat, if I remember correctly, on the boat from America to India, they become convinced of credo baptism. Mm-hmm. And they're ultimately baptized in Calcutta before moving on to Burma. I love that story for so many things. Luther Rice, I think it's Luther that ends up coming back to America and forming a Baptist missionary society. What implications, other than that, did their convictions of credo baptism, because congregations, again, were paedo Baptist, mm-hmm. what implications did that have for their ministry?
Well, it was enormous, enormous. It was not merely, we often rightly think of mode and practice and subject of baptism as something on that second tier or perhaps third tier in terms of certainly for fellowship, but also in terms of partnership, even for the Great Commission, things like that. But for them, it really became a first tier issue, partly because he had just spent a few years convincing all these Congregationalist churches to form a mission society to send him. And now he's basically landing there saying, I've changed my views, and therefore, one of the things I admire about him is he had the integrity to say, I've changed my views, therefore I can't accept your funding. He didn't decide to, well, can you work with me for a little while or continue to fund me? And I'm not going to be planting Congregationalist churches, therefore you shouldn't fund me more. So there's a significant amount of courage and cost for what we might consider a secondary type doctrine. But really, I also just admire his integrity in the pursuit of the study and the willingness to change his view. Their views began to change on the boat, but didn't change completely until they arrived. He was a linguist. Part of what he'll go on to do is translate the Bible into Burmese. So knew the original languages. But really what was motivating him was he knew he was going to meet the great William Carey, who was a Baptist. So he was needing, he's like, I better shore up my arguments here. Because he's going to obviously, so he's studying the beauty of it is he's studying the New Testament and coming to these convictions. To point to our earlier comment, it was Anne as well. So he followed this. She's studying it as well. And there's a letter that's where she's writing back saying, he was convinced first, but I've come to the place I have no other choice. This is what we believe is what the Bible teaches. Therefore, we should follow this. So Luther Rice, a friend of theirs, was basically 2 weeks behind on another boat, also sent out from these churches. When they arrived and met in Calcutta, the Judsons had been working through this. Luther Rice basically is getting up to speed with them before they make their decision. And they essentially all begin to work through to make their decision. One of the most amazing things in Calcutta today is Carey Baptist Church, the site at which they were baptized. Yeah. We think of these things happening 300, 500 years ago. They were not that long ago. So if you get to go to Calcutta and find Carey Baptist Church, the baptistry, which is under the floorboards of the main sanctuary, is still there. So you can lift those up and walk down into the place in which the Judsons were baptized. Wow. And it's just a reminder, again, we can rightly put baptism at a place of discussion with Baptist friends and things like that. But for them, I just admire their conviction to follow what they believe and the integrity to believe what the scriptures teaches in order to say, we've basically got to redo this. Well, Luther Rice, will you go back? And he was he needed to go back for some health reasons anyway. He was not going to be able to stay. And Luther Rice became one of the most prominent organizers of churches, Baptist churches up and down the Eastern Seaboard for the creation of a new Baptist Foreign Missionary Society that would go on to shape the future of Baptist missions in this country from then until now.
Wow. Jason, when Judson's in India, he makes the decision to go to Burma, present-day Myanmar, which I would add is essentially what we would call closed country. What did his ministry look like? And kind of what was the trajectory of fruitfulness there?
It was very hard. Felix Carey, William Carey's son, had gone and determined it was not the right time. It was just too hard. It had come back and basically tried to get them to change their mind. The Judsons spent some time in prayer. Obviously, this is somebody who had been there. They were basically coming down to, well, should we go to the island of Penang off the coast of Malaysia? That would be the other place, or to Burma. And as they prayed, they decided, no, we brought us here was Burma. So really, for the first 6 years, it was incredibly hard. Not only do you have sort of governmental opposition, it wasn't that there weren't British or even Americans in that area. Global tea industry and other things had brought English-speaking peoples to that country for some time, but not for the purpose of sharing the gospel. And so it took them a number of years even to just get acclimated. Judson, of course, dialed in on learning the language to begin to be able to translate it, to figure out how to survive. And during this time, they're undergoing just immense personal suffering. Lost one and then two newborn children during these early years. Judson undergoes all kinds of physical maladies to the point that it's not clear whether it's due to just his intense study or the climate. I mean, Burma is incredibly difficult place to be, even today, just humidity alone and other things. He got to a point where his head is just constantly pounding and his ear is certainly ringing, headaches 24 hours a day that he could not even read anymore. This is all in those early times. And then, of course, just incredible hardship, especially.
Man. Jason, what can we learn? Like, again, we could probably spend episodes listening to this brother's story. Kind of put the professor hat on right now. What can we learn from his example today?
Yeah, I think going back to the beginning, I mean, I think you definitely can look through the life of Ann and Adoniram Judson, both what led them to the mission field and also just the richness of their time of service. Ann will eventually pass away, and Judson has to process through that, you know, continues to press on. Is number one, that their lives do point to Christ. I mean, what's driving them to leave family and friends, and to persevere in Burma is they believe the good news about the Lord Jesus Christ and believe that that's worthy of taking to people who've never heard. And that alone is worth studying their lives. There are, as I say, their life and their all their, you know, goods and bads, their imperfections are preserved through much of their correspondence and what's been documented about them. So you see imperfect people attempting to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. Their courage through those things, their integrity, I think even in doctrinal matters, that when they're coming to a place where clear division from those who have sent, they're willing to basically give up everything to continue to do what they're doing. And then their just steadfastness, particularly Judd Adoniram's belief that the most important thing I can do is get a copy of the scriptures into the hands of these people that will outlive even my life.
And
there's a lot to discuss, you know, and obviously Mac would know a lot more about this, just in terms of their intentional choice about contextualization. At what point are they going to contextualize to the culture, you know, not bend Christianity to a culture more than it should be bent. There's a lot of, you know, even helpful early principles, even though these are early 19th century missionaries that their practices would not translate directly into the 21st century. There's still a lot to look in there and to see and to.
Oh, absolutely, Jason. You know, when you look at the Serampore Agreement by Carey there in India, it's surprisingly modern and forward-thinking. So I think we should be a little more careful about disparaging these early missionaries. Many of their principles and missions were biblically based. So tell us about suffering in Judson's life. In a lot of ways, we think of him about suffering.
Yeah, he, of course, mentioned some of the physical things that he went through. Part of what he got wrapped up into in the 1820s is there began to be a great conflict between British people and those parts of the world. And Judson, being an American, was not physically looking different than any English people. And so one of the ways the Burmese government began to control things was to basically arrest every English-speaking person. And this was at the peak of Judson almost completing the translation of the New Testament. So literally people are coming into their house. Judson rolls up the scrolls that he has and stuffs them in a pillow, grabs that pillow, and is taken off some many miles away into a prison-type situation. And does all she can do to follow him, basically is able to set up camp outside the prison walls and sustain his life through the time in which he's in prison. And the prison conditions were sweltering and just inhumane. He was often, his ankles were roped together and tied to a sort of bamboo pole. And for most of the day, he was lifted up by his ankles just to where his shoulder blades were rested on the ground. And it would give some relief and was allowed to walk outside and would give him some food and sustenance. If she hadn't sacrificed, he wouldn't survive. It's really those instances that decline Anne's health to where when he finally is released from prison, she dies. And that puts him to a place mentally and otherwise of just deep despair and despondency. The New Testament manuscript is preserved, but he essentially attempts to destroy everything else that he's done. He is brought back out of that by God's kindness and grace and able to continue to persevere. A lot of it is just the arrival of other missionaries. He will remarry another missionary widow at some point.
Yeah, I was just going to say, one of the things that we often forget about Judson as we talk about him was, I think it was 7 years before he saw the very first person come to faith in Christ. I think that's a good word for listeners who expect the missionaries that are being sent out from our churches for immediate fruit. Adoniram in no way was expecting anything quick in his ministry, wanted to learn the language and the culture, and it took 7 years. And I think oftentimes we're a little impatient and we forget. I think there was a lot more patience that day culturally, honestly, because of you have to take 6 months to get over on boats places, but I think there's a lot to learn from there as well. I'm sure there was, Jason, did you read anything just in your studies of Judson about how he coped with even just that long, patient wait for conversion?
I think like anyone, he would love for it to have happened sooner. So, he's doing all that he can to preach the gospel faithfully.
That's right.
But again, because especially in those days, it was Carey and Judson, the way that they saw was, a translation for proclamation, meaning the best thing I can do is learn the language. In that case, even creating a alphabet and things for people to read and be able to understand the scriptures in some parts. So he knew that would take time. But I think it was incredibly hard. I think Judson took encouragement because Carey went through a similar thing years. And so that was well documented, well known. In some of these places, it's just going to be hard. But when that first person trusts Christ and repents and is baptized, it just made it all the more sweeter. And as God kindly works, that then turns into now sort of opening the doors for a harvest of sorts and it beginning to go forward from there.
And by the time he died, statistics that I've read says that there was 100 churches in Burma and over 8,000 Christians. And he didn't do that on his own. Other people came and joined him. Churches planted churches, just good work.
Yeah.
Amazing. He when he arrived in Burma for the first time, there were a number of these little temples of pagodas everywhere. And he then said, May God let me live my life here until all those pagodas become Christian steeples. He didn't quite see that, but definitely, through the translation of the scriptures and the mobilizing of others, he did see many of them.
And a good prayer, right? Well, hey, Jason, just amazing to think about Judson, and I'm looking forward to meeting him in heaven. He's held out as a missionary hero, but are there any concerns or even dangers as we look to him as a model given the modern world?
Yeah, I think that, to look at someone in the past, you also have to do good history, remember he's a 19th century pioneer missionary from America. He didn't have it all figured out. He wasn't aiming to live a life that would project to the 21st century and translate. You have to I think that allows us to read him with grace and understand we're standing on his shoulders. So, of course, we can see more clearly and further, but we're still standing on his shoulders. So I think just sort of rightly recognizing, not trying to make him out. The other thing, too, is obviously the need for Bible translation as a method of missionary service is still needed and prevalent today. we should still prioritize those things. But through the advent of technology and all kinds of things, we shouldn't allow that to slow us down in the sense of, you know, there are many, many ways to communicate with peoples all over the world, even if they don't have a translation of the scriptures. So that should not hinder us. And we look to the modern secular world, you know, Fortune 500 companies are not slowing down their efforts to get their products to these peoples all over the world. We should not be, you know, slowing down our efforts, of course, in a responsible way.
Yeah.
And, but we should nevertheless be attempting to do that.
That's good.
I love, Jason, that you pointed out he was a linguist. And so I just think there's something that students who want to go and be involved in translation work, like, go learn the original languages. Please don't translate, if possible, don't translate from English into another language, because English is a translation from the original language. So enroll at schools like Midwestern and other seminaries to learn original languages before you translate the Bible. Just wanted to put in a plug for that. Mac, is there anything that you want to add on? I know you love Judson, so it's probably awkward to say, hey, there's some things that I would have some pause about, but I'm going to ask it anyways.
Well, just be careful to, just what Jason said, that we can't just take his life and apply it. The suffering that he went through, there are certainly people, Christians, who are suffering right now in similar ways in North Korea, some other places. But by and large, sometimes I don't want to glorify his suffering. Mm-hmm. There are times to get out of town if you can, too. By and large, I'm so grateful for Ed and Iram Judson. I notice a lot of people name their kid Judson, but I wish they'd go all the way and name him Ed and Iram.
So cool. That would be so cool. Yeah, maybe like a year or two after this episode, Mac, you're just going to start meeting a bunch of babies named Ed and Iram. Listeners, it's felt bold to do that. Jason, are there any books that you would recommend to listeners? Hey, go pick up this book about Judson.
Yeah, I think still stands well for an introduction is Courtney Anderson's To the Golden Shore. It's written in the mid-20th century, but he actually wrote that as a screenplay, hoping it would be turned into a film, or there were plans for it to be turned into a film. So you have to understand what you're reading there is invented dialogue. But nonetheless, he's using early biographical sources to render something that's faithful. That has served to inspire many. It is a bit dated, but it's still really good. On a more academic, very careful level, Evan Burns's book, A Supreme Desire to Please Him, I think is the best academic treatment right now in terms of really trying to turn over every stone, look at every source, help us to know all that we can know about Judson. That's a wonderful book from dear brother who is faithful in his own missionary activity as well.
Mac, are there any out there that you want to encourage folks to? Courtney Anderson's the one that I think is just the most.
I do too. Of course, a shorter course would be John Piper's 21 Servants of Sovereign Joy. I think is a good treatment.
Special introduction. Yes.
The introduction is great.
Yeah.
Well, if there's any film guys out there listening to this, could you please take Courtney Anderson's biography? It is stunning. There's this incredible part of the book. It's made for Hollywood, where literally I think it's the British want to get Judson out of India. Like, he had no permission to be there. And so he had this narrow window. And if I remember it correctly, a boat is leaving for Burma and he manages to get to the boat before it leaves. Otherwise he would have been sent to England, of all places, England. And the trading company would have sent him out. So I think it would be a wonderful, wonderful. We're making Christian movies all over the place. Someone please make that
for
one.
TV.
So good. Jason, thanks so much for your time, brother. We so love your ministry at Midwestern and just your contributions to church history at large, and specifically helping Baptists learn church history well. We want to do that well. For our listeners, we keep talking about Burma. It's modern day Myanmar. Be in prayer for that country. There is a lot of difficulties for the church right there. And I know of a number of potential missionaries who would love to get into that country and continue on that work that Judson started, but cannot get in there. So if you can just take time with family worship and with your churches in the days ahead, would you pray for the people of Myanmar? That's it for this episode. Friends, thanks so much for your time.
For more articles, books, and podcasts,
please visit 9marks.org.